The following is a Sunday Feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 10, given by His Divine Grace, Dhanavir Das Vanachari, on November 19, 1989, in Dallas, Texas.
Jana Shalakaya Chakshunan Mirutan Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Thank you all for coming. We're going to speak a little bit about Krishna consciousness. For those of you who are here for the first time, try to give a introduction. And for those who have been here many times, we'll also try to give further insights into the understanding of Krishna consciousness. If there are any questions, I'll leave time at the end after the talk, so you'll be able to ask any questions that you have. That will be very nice. Reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, Text 10. I'll read the Sanskrit and then the translation. Bijamam saravabhutanam vidiparta sanatanam budhir budhimatam asmi tejas tejas vinamaham. O son of Prita, know that I am the original seed of all existences, the intelligence of the intelligent, and the prowess of all powerful men. And this is Krishna speaking. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, God Himself. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita, Song of God, is actually the most important book that we have access to on this planet, because it is the recorded words of God Himself speaking to His devotee Arjuna. Here, Arjuna is described as, O son of Prita. His mother's name was Prita. Krishna says that I am the original seed of all existences. We see that living entities are coming from, you might say, a seed, just like trees are coming from seeds. And even in our human species, it is the male that passes the seed to the female, and this way the species continues. Well, what is the source of our species? Krishna says He is the source of that species, not only of the humans, but also the non-humans and the plants. In other words, to confirm what's stated in the Bible, is there a puppet theater this afternoon for the children? I saw the puppets going upstairs. So maybe... Okay. So, not only is He the father of the human beings, but He's the father of all living entities. Mamaivangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakshastran indriyani prakriti stani kashti. Aham bija pradapita. Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father for all living entities. In another place. If we're looking for the source, then Krishna is saying, yes, I am that source. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. It's quite popular now to try the inductive method of finding out the source. Tracing back my father, his father, great-great-grandfather. However, this is a difficult process because we're distanced by so much time. We're here now. It's very difficult to know exactly what happened 1,000 years ago or 10,000 or 1 billion years ago. That is a difficult process to understand the past by induction. However, there's a children's... So any children whose parents approve, can attend the puppet theater. We have a puppet theater next door. Where is it? In the theater. Upstairs. So, they're all welcome to attend that. It is not that the source of everything is something inanimate. We see that the source of everything must have all the qualities of that which comes out. Janma jasayataha, the first statement of the Vedanta Sutra proclaims that the absolute truth is he from whom everything emanates. And he has all the qualities. Just like if we analyze earth. Now there are five gross elements. At least that is one way of breaking them down, according to the Vedas. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And each one of these elements is invested with a particular type of sense object. For example, in the ether we find sound. We only find sound in space. You don't see anything, you cannot touch anything, but you can hear. Sound can be transmitted through space. And we see that through our satellites, we can broadcast sound. Then, we have the next is air. In the element of air, we have sound and also the tactile sense of touch. We can feel the air passing by us. In the next element, we have fire. Fire has not only sound, but it has sense of touch also. And even more, it has the sense of form. When we see fire, we can see form. We can also, it illuminates objects. Then the next element is water. In water, we have not only the sense of hearing, sound, and touch and form, but we also have taste. Taste water. Cannot taste fire or taste air or space. But you can taste water, liquid. Then finally there's earth. And earth has not only the above four elements or the sound, etc. But it also has fragrance. Now, Krishna is also saying that he's the intelligence of the intelligent and the prowess of all powerful men. We'll read the purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Bija means seed. Krishna is the seed of everything. There are various living entities, movable and inert. Birds, beasts, men, and many other living creatures are moving living entities. Trees and plants, however, are inert. They cannot move, but only stand. Every entity is contained within the scope of 8,400,000 species of life. Some of them are moving and some of them are inert. In all cases, however, the seed of their life is Krishna. So this brings us back to the point of giving the examples of the elements. That in the earth, we have all five elements. And similarly, with Krishna, we have all the different characteristics which are there in the material world or even in the spiritual world are coming from him. In other words, he's the source of all the fragrance. He's the fragrance of the earth. He's the source of love. He's the source of hate. He's the source of illumination. He's the source of sound. It's all coming from Him. He's the source of personality. He's the source of mischief. For example, Krishna is known as Makanataskar, which means He's the butter thief. You see some of the illustrations, the paintings here, this one back here. You see that Mother Jashoda, the foster mother of Krishna, when He appeared on this planet, she's binding Him with ropes. Why is she doing that? Because He stole butter. So He was guilty. He was judged guilty by His mother. And even His brother, you see, Balaram, is hiding behind the poster. He doesn't want to get caught. This is a very enjoyable pastime of Krishna. That tendency for stealing is also coming from Krishna. What about the tendency for amorous love? Then we see this painting where we have Krishna dancing with all the gopis. Beautiful young damsels. Where does our desire to enjoy conjugal relationship come from? It comes from Krishna. It must be there in the original source. Otherwise, then he would be lacking. Some people say that the absolute source must have no personality, must have no qualities. Why should it have no qualities? They say because any qualities that it might have would be a limitation. If we try to address any characteristics of the absolute truth, then it couldn't be transcendental because we would limit it by our names or by our characteristics. However, that is an incomplete understanding. Certainly, the absolute by our characteristics. However, that is an incomplete understanding. Certainly, the absolute truth must be beyond our conception. But we learn from the Vedic scriptures that the absolute truth has characteristics, has qualities. And these qualities are not like our qualities, being mundane and limited, but they're unlimited and they're perfect. And they're completely spiritual, not tainted by material energy. Okay? Continuing in the purport, as stated in the Vedic literature, Brahman, or the Supreme Absolute Truth, is that from which everything is emanating. Krishna is Parabrahman, the Supreme Spirit. Brahman is impersonal, and Parabrahman is personal. Impersonal Brahman is situated in the personal aspect. That is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Does everyone follow this philosophical point? Very important point in spiritual life, to distinguish the absolute truth, whether he's personal or impersonal. It's quite an important point. Because if we conclude that the absolute truth, or God, shall we say, is impersonal, means he's not a person, so we can't use the term he, and we can't ascribe any form or any desires. Because when we speak of desires, we speak of persons. We cannot speak of a stone desiring or a piece of paper desiring. Isn't it? Even computers, as brilliant as they are, they cannot desire. One has to have life force. So if we say that God has no life, He has no ability to desire, He has no personality, then what have we done? We've killed God. We've reduced Him to simply some kind of an element. Some people say God is light. Well, light is light. God is the source of light, but He's much more than that. If someone comes to you and says, "Sir, you are just light." Well, is that a very complimentary statement? You are just light. No, I may be light. I may give off some light, because we all have some effulgence, not so much. But there are ways of calculating that effulgence. So if someone says, you are light. No, I'm more than light. I'm a person. I have desires. I have creativity. I have intelligence. Isn't it? I have a body too. I have all these things. For example, I have the potential to create more living beings. Not exactly the spirit souls, but I can create bodies. I can produce offspring. I can have children. Shouldn't God be able to do that if He's the source of everything? They say that the Son, like Father, like Son. So we have one head, two hands, and our Father has one head, two hands, isn't it? Everyone, I think, will agree. And His Father, your grandfather, He also, one head, two hands. And His Father, where in the line did someone not have one head, two hands? Which ancestor of yours? Does anyone have an idea which ancestor didn't have one head, two hands? Where along the line? That's not the way nature works. We see that nature reproduces. The father and the mother produce a like offspring. In this way, we can also trace out that the source must be a person, one head, two hands. This is stated in the Vedas. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, it's another name for Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the original person. The original person. And it's also stated in the Bible that man is created after the image of God. These things have to be taken literally, not that we should wash them away with speculation and then come to an impersonal conclusion. This impersonalism is very detrimental. First of all, it takes one's love away. How can you love a light? All right. And then to take it further, if one says that we are all that light, that is also a common philosophy, we are all one, there's no individuality, then all love is lost. But that's not the nature of the soul. Why are we all looking for love? I think we can all agree that we're all striving for a perfect loving relationship or loving relationships. Why are we striving for that if it's not natural? Why does no one want to die? If annihilation of our individuality were the original state of the living being, then we should not be at all afraid of annihilating our individuality. But nobody wants to die. Everyone wants to live. Nobody wants to be alone. Why is the greatest punishment solitary confinement? Because there's no relationships, isn't it? And many times when a person is put into solitary confinement, padded cell, he goes insane. We need relationships. We desire relationships. But we're thinking that the material relationships will satisfy us. But they do not. We have to learn how to relate on the spiritual level. And the perfect relationship is reestablished. That's called yoga. Yoga means to reestablish that relationship, the link, with the Supreme Personality, Krishna. When we reestablish that link, then we're completely satisfied. We don't desire anything else. That is the perfection of life. There are three stages of practicing, or shall we say, reestablishing. The first is called sambandha. That means one establishes his relationship again with the Supreme Lord. Then, when one goes a little further, it becomes abhideya, where he's engaged in devotional activities, in a service attitude towards the Supreme. He's practicing under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. He's learning the art of how to please the Lord. And in the ultimate stage, prayojana, where one actually has developed a loving relationship. That love may be expressed and the relationship may be there in a variety of humors, or what we call rasa in Sanskrit. One may relate with the Lord, as we said, as mother and son, or parent and son, or as lover and beloved, or as friend, or as servant and master. These are the primary relationships that one can have with the Lord. And this information is not very readily available outside of the Vedic knowledge. I'm sure that this must be quite something new for most of you who are not familiar with this, that you can relate with God as lover and friend. Yes, He is the supreme controller, He's the most powerful, and we're all His servants. That's a fact. But once you get beyond the formalities of that relationship, the Lord is willing to open Himself up and become very, very intimate friend, or very intimate lover, or intimate son. And that He will respond exactly to the devotee's desire, perfectly. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Yayatamam parpadyate tangsitaiva bhajamyaham. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. In other words, he's reciprocating with them individually. I'll continue with the purport. Krishna is the source of everything. He is the root. As the root of a tree maintains the whole tree, Krishna, being the original root of all things, maintains everything in this material manifestation. This is also confirmed in the Vedic literature, Katha Upanishad 2.2.13, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Jovadadati Kaman. He is the prime eternal amongst all eternals. He is the supreme living entity of all living entities, and He alone is maintaining all life. One cannot do anything without intelligence, and Krishna also says that He is the root of all intelligence. Unless a person is intelligent, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Where does this intelligence come from? We are very proud. If we have some intelligence and we can get a degree or something, we generally become very proud of our intelligence. But shouldn't we give credit to the person who supplied it? We cannot make intelligence. If intelligence is not within our grasp, for example, we cannot take some chemicals and put together a living being that has intelligence. So if the greatest brains cannot understand these things, then that must mean there's a greater brain. It's not a very intelligent statement to conclude that because I cannot figure out the source, therefore there must be no source, or the source must have no intelligence. Is that logical? No. So I thank you very much. We've given a little idea of the philosophy. Maybe now we can entertain some questions if anyone has any. Yes?
This image of Krishna as a person, how does Krishna then relate to the non-person, all animals and plants?
Everyone hear the question? I'll repeat it. If we understand Krishna as a person, then how does He relate to non-persons such as animals and what else? And plants. Well, they're also persons, but they just have a different type of bodies, at least in the material world. Spiritually, the soul that is inhabiting the different bodies are all of the same quality, all of us living entities. For example, you and I, we're different persons, but we have the same quality soul. We're all jiva souls. Okay, we're parts and parcels of God. We have our own individuality. We have a great deal of potential and intelligence. We're persons. But sometimes we may not inhabit human bodies, but we may inhabit the body of a cat. But cats are also persons. Ask any cat owner. Isn't it? Every cat owner will agree that my cat is a person. She has her own personality. No. Or a dog, or a plant. They also have their personality. We may not appreciate their personality so much. We may think they're a bit dull, don't speak so nicely, or what have you. But they have their personalities, and they express with flowers and with their leaves and with fruits. Isn't that a nice expression of their personality? To produce a nice juicy fruit? Or an ant, he has his personality. He gets upset. If you start sprinkling water at him, he becomes all flustered. He gets under stress like we get under stress. And he works. He has to go to work every day just like we plug in. And you see the ants, they're working all day digging, right? We have our bulldozers, and they have their little mandibles, their mouths, and they do it. It's not as developed as our system, but they're working nonetheless, and they have their social life. If you study in the encyclopedia, you'll find so many things about their social habits. They have their queen, or they have their order within the community. And you know, if they find something to eat, you've seen ants before, they go out, and if they find something, they bring it back. They struggle so hard to bring it back so that the rest of the group can enjoy it also. In many ways, they're more advanced than we are. They're not so selfish. It's perfect communism. Therefore, those who really like the communistic way of life, they may get their next bodies as ants, and they can perfectly execute it. The problem is that the ants don't understand about God. And that is the deficiency of all the species other than the human species. They have no opportunity to understand spiritual matters. Human life is endowed with greater intelligence, atato brahma jigyasa. And the greatest opportunity is to understand my spiritual nature and to engage in such a way that I'll be eligible to get liberation from the material modes of nature. So Krishna relates with the animals and the plants in the same way. They're his sons, but they have unfortunately given his association up, and he wants them to come back. He's waiting patiently when they will come back to me and enjoy with me in the spiritual world, when they'll give up this vain attempt at enjoyment. Other questions? We have a few more minutes before the aarti. We're going to have an aarti ceremony with chanting. And these deities here that you see on the altar, Radha Kalachanji, the center deities, that is Krishna on the left side and his eternal consort Radharani on the right side. We were noticing just the other day in the newspaper here in Dallas, the Catholic, one particular diocese, they brought an icon, you may have seen that in the paper, of Virgin Mary. And it was interesting to note that the people, this particular icon or statue of the Virgin Mary is considered to be very holy. And when the people received the statue, some of them were even crying. They had tears in their eyes. They were feeling so much emotion. That's very nice. Because on the spiritual platform, the form of the Lord and the Lord himself are non-different. In other words, God can appear within this material energy. Because for him, there's no such thing as material energy. Everything is his energy. He can transform matter into spirit. And that is what happens when he appears in a so-called stone-like form. But actually, he is giving us the opportunity of seeing him and associating with him in this particular form, because we cannot see spirit. in our present state. It's called Archa Vigraha. A very merciful form of the Lord appearing in material elements for our benefit. And the more we serve them, the more we serve Krishna in this form, the more we make spiritual advancement, the more we learn to love God. This is the process. Otherwise, if there's no service, well then how will we develop love? What will be the basis for the relationship? Now, there are many different ways to serve the Lord. One of them is this deity worship. And another way is to chant His holy name. This Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you see, sometimes it's lit up here, this sign. And the mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chant is considered to be the easiest way to develop love for God. It doesn't cost anything. One can do it at home. He doesn't have to go to the temple even. Some people live far away from a temple. Some people might be embarrassed. But they can chant in the privacy of their own home or car or their own room. And they will develop their love for God. Because that is actually what we're here for. That's what we're supposed to be doing. It's stated in all the scriptures of the world. Whether one is taking from the Christian tradition or the Islam, you know you're not wasting your time. You know this is actually a wonderful thing because the heart becomes so cleansed and purified. Cheto darpana marjanam, bhava mahadvagni nirvapanam, shreya kairava chandra kavitaranam, vidya varujivanam, anandam budivardhanam, pratipadam pranamritasvaranam. Sarvatmasnaparam param vijayate si Krishna sankirtanam. It's chanting. Cleanses the heart of all dust. It is the easiest way to become free from all one's past karma. The karma, our past activities, are weighing the living entity down tremendously. There are different reactions. Some of those reactions we are already experiencing from our past activities. And some are waiting in seed form. They haven't fructified yet. And some, by our activities that we're performing now, we're creating more future reactions. That's the law of karma. And to be bound up by the law of karma is very difficult to get out. But if one simply chants Hare Krishna, this Maha Mantra, he can be freed from more reactions than he can even imagine. All removed. That is the power of the chanting. And when that karmic influence is removed from the living entity, then he can experience real happiness, real liberation. But as long as we are so bound up, we cannot be happy. Now, one of the symptoms of chanting is that you'll feel happy. You'll feel great relief. At least we've experienced it, and it is an eternal process. It's not a new thing. And there are evidences in the Vedic scriptures, so many evidences of those who have experienced the bliss of chanting Hare Krishna. Not only that, but all over the world, many people every day are taking up this chanting. And they're experiencing more and more pleasure. That is the nature of Krishna and Rama. That they're reservoirs of pleasure. Yes, question.
We're talking about how the Catholics have called this deity of Virgin Mary.
Yes.
But they also call it Madonna. Or just call Madonna. I was wondering
Oh, I don't know. Madan Mohan in Sanskrit. Madan is a name for Cupid. You know, we've all heard of Cupid, the one who shoots his arrows and causes lust in the material world. There is such a person as Cupid. But, and in the material world, Cupid, or the influence of lust, is the most powerful influence. Everyone has been stung by the arrows of Cupid. As soon as a young man sees a young girl, immediately he's stunned. You, same thing, opposite. Young girl sees young, immediately stunned. Becomes captivated. And there's so many Cupid's arrows flying around now, it's impossible to even count the number of arrows that are there. However, although that lusty influence is so strong, Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. Mohan means he even bewilders Cupid. That means he's more powerful than Cupid. He is a transcendental Cupid. If one sees the beautiful form of Krishna and hears the beautiful name of Krishna, etc., he will become more attracted to Krishna than to this lust. He will lose his lust and develop real love on the spiritual platform. That is Madan Mohan. That is very nice. Wouldn't it be nice to get free from this lust and instead have real love? We have a few more minutes before the RT. If there's any other questions, maybe some of our guests who are here for the first time might have some questions. Seems like there's some note-taking back there. You're doing some reports or something? Yes? Oh, that's very nice. So what do you think so far? What's that? Could someone say what she said? I couldn't hear. Interesting. Thank you. Of course, I don't deserve any credit. It didn't come from me. Lord Krishna is presenting this knowledge, and we are just like the messengers, like the postman. And the postman, postmen are not glorified too much. They may not be known as great orators or great poets or philosophers, but they sometimes carry some very valuable information. And that is their duty. If they just bring the same message. Now, if the postman thinks, let me open this letter and let me check the particular writing. And he goes through, this is incorrect. And he changes and he's adding. He puts a postscript, P.S. at the end. He adds, well, then he's not a very good postman, is he? That's not what you want in a postman. You want a postman to just be simple. And just bring you the mail, untampered with. But we are trying to be like that, just to present the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without tampering with it. And then the effect is you can relate directly with Krishna. That is how the spiritual master is understood. He is the transparent via media. We can see God through him. Just as if we have a pair of glasses, if our eyes are defective, we see through the glasses. Now the glass is between myself and the object, my eye and the object. But it doesn't hamper my vision, but rather it enhances it. Similarly, the true representative of Krishna will not hamper our vision of God. He will not obscure, but actually he'll make it very clear and easy. It becomes easier. Still have another few minutes. Any questions? All right, I'll read a little bit more. I'll read the next text. Krishna says, Balam balavatam chaham kama raga vivarjitam dharma virudho bhuteshu kamo smi bharatarshava. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. O Lord of the Bharatas, Arjuna. Sometimes people ask, what about sex? I think you don't allow sex, they think. No, Krishna says that he is sex. But he is sex, which is not contrary to religious principles. Illicit sex or casual sex, that's not Krishna. That's Maya. That's the manifestation of the illusory energy. It's not spiritual. But if one has sex, and that sex is also explained in the Vedic scriptures, that religious sex means within religious marriage and for the purpose of producing a Krishna conscious child. That is religious sex. And that is Krishna, and that is spiritual. And that is the purpose of having the procreative organ. Not to use it for some kind of enjoyment. That enjoyment is illusion. And the result will be pain and suffering for everyone, as we're seeing now. Even immediately we're getting the results sometimes. Or if not immediately, then the results are coming, the bad reactions. So many diseases, so many unwanted children, so many abortions, murders. We become implicated in so many sinful activities because of trying to enjoy something which is not enjoyable. It's Maya, it's not Krishna. So in this way, Krishna says that he is the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. We like strong leaders, but they should be devoid of material desire. Then the strong leader is very important. In another place, Krishna says, of men, I am the monarch. We're not against the idea of having strong leadership, but there should be no exploitation. I'll read the purport. The strong man's strength should be applied to protect the weak, not for personal aggression. Similarly, sex life, according to religious principles, dharma, should be for the propagation of children, not otherwise. The responsibility of parents is then to make their offspring Krishna conscious. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we have married couples, husband, wife, and they're producing children. And they are raising those children to become Krishna conscious. That is the perfection of parenthood. Otherwise, if they don't wish to have any more children, then they abstain. That is the perfect planned parenthood. That is the perfect contraception. They have so many other ways to try to stop the so-called overpopulation, but simply abstinence is recommended. Someone may say, well, without that, we're not getting enough pleasure in life. That's where the pleasure is. We say to these people, you don't know where the real pleasure is. You're looking in the wrong place. The real pleasure is within your soul. The real pleasure is in your relationship with Krishna. It simply needs to be reawakened. And that is the process of Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga that we are performing here. To reawaken that dormant transcendental pleasure. It's not something artificial. Okay, thank you very much. And now we're going to have the aarti. If everyone can kindly stand. Hare Krishna.